Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Fill My Eyes with Poetry. Happy Friday, everybody. Happy Friday. TGIF just doesn't begin to even express it. I hope everyone had a great week. Absolutely. And I hope you all have a better weekend to follow. And hey, Rex, how are you tonight?
I'm just fine. What's going on?
Oh, you know, same old. Trying to keep my feet in check. Other than that, not too much, you know. I'm telling you, I'm trying to figure out what to do with them. I think I might hang them out the window later. It's always a good idea, right? Yeah, there was a little something I wanted to touch base on tonight, just a little something. When I was going through and loading up the recordings for tonight, the audios, I did notice that there's some folks that are putting the same poem in 2 and 3 shows in a week. And I really don't want to see that happen, because then all it is a bunch of reruns by the end of the week, you know? And I've seen it happen on more than one occasion this week, and it kind of is a concern to me. So if everyone just be a little, you know, I don't know, just spread it out a little bit. I don't want to have the same show or the same poem on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. It doesn't matter which 3 days they are. I don't really want them on Tuesdays in the same week. And I guess because I load all the audios up, I see them. so they're fresh in my mind each time I do it. So that's how I catch it. But people listening, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's like watching Wii TV or something, you know. It's like watching all the old reruns of the old shows. I mean, the works are great. I can't take that away from them, but still, you know, just doesn't, I don't know, it's just not good. Not good to me. It's not conducive of a nice, fresh show each week. So anyway, that was my big gripe for tonight, and I'm sorry I had to say it, but, you know, I just felt that I should. Because, you know, everybody's got to have something to gripe about. My feet have been bugging me all day, so it's my turn to bug somebody. So that's the way it works. It's a trickle-down effect. Anywho's how. There's that. We have a nice board look, a nice looking board for tonight, Rex. I think.
Yes.
I think it should be a good.
Well, your feet must be the new barometer.
Oh God, I can't stand it. I'm telling you, I was ready to go through the roof from the time I woke up this morning. I mean, I just can't get away from them. I don't know what to do with them. And rain all day long here. And I'm telling you, if I could figure out a way to have the rain not affect my feet, I wouldn't care if it rained every day. But it's unbearable, really unbearable. And I, you know, I hate to whine and cry and go on about it, but man, they hurt so bad. I feel for anybody who's got neuropathy or anything with their feet, because, man, what do? You know, you need them to get around. So I get up, I feel like I'm walking on glass. Yeah, I do. I feel like I'm walking on glass half the time. it's pretty nasty. And just the pressure of having my feet on the floor can set me right off into orbit. It's like, wow. But, you know, it's not going to kill me, but it's going to make me kind of grouchy and uncomfortable. So I guess that's a good thing, right? It's not going to kill me. But, yeah, so you said you had your share of rain this week, too, or today. I don't know about this week, but I know for today.
Yep, today, and it's supposed to rain again tomorrow. And I think what we got.
I don't even know what our tomorrow is supposed to be. I gave up looking, I think. That's something more to look forward to,
okay.
Right?
Partly cloudy the next 2 days, and then rain again on Monday.
Oh, there you go. Oh, that's wonderful.
We're finally, I've got 90s coming up in the middle of the week.
Oh, that's
nice.
First. Well, let's see, I have lightning bolts in all my clouds from Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, next Friday, next Sunday. Yep. Yeah, 40% chance of rain tomorrow. So I guess that's not so bad. But 80 on Sunday. 78 on Monday. Then we go 71.
There you go. Warm weather.
Yeah, that just means it's going to be hot and humid. That was my luck anyway. But, yeah, it's all right. And we have 80 next Saturday and 82 next Sunday. That's not too bad. That's something to look forward to, that's for sure. Because it's, yeah, it's really been something. Oh, gosh, yeah. But anyway, yeah, just what a day. What a day, what a way. No, so yeah, it'll be good when it'll be nice weather and we'll get some dry-out weather and all that as we go along, you know, just same old, same old. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. My hat sounds
enough.
Like a zoo out. Absolutely. Sounds like a little zoo out in my living room. I don't quite know what they're doing, but makes me wonder. Okay, well, it looks like it's just you and I, Rex, so we'll give it a whirl. I don't know. But I think I'm going to put this first one up. Yeah, well, you know. This could be a short show, and my feet could say thank you at this point. Yeah, so I'm going to put this one up for you, Rex, and we'll start here. This is Daniel DeShino.
The Wise Always Watch by Daniel DeShino. I, the ageless bird, the blackened cloud that launched the flight of legends, I do not fear, for what could tremble fear itself? I watch, and I wait, on rooftops thrown with crown, for the tragic earthbound stories to unfold. I sit and watch the muddled masses fight. Which ones will battle, it matters not. But today, below, does mongoose dance and snake strike, and patience be the grim reaper's tool of how I learned. Snake lay dead and mongoose poisoned, and seems an encore to the requiem of all creatures. I've seen things that slither and speak with venomous tongue, all which tend to rot as a vain, worthless weed, and those that feed upon the weaker ones tend to end poisoned by their own greed. So upon the bloodied and soiled ground, I land and nutriate, regurgitate, recirculate, ruminate, from snake uncoiled. And I feed with one eye searching, two ears surveying, and a nose sourcing the sense of the world, as all wise creatures of experience do. And I sense the fury of greed from behind, quick wings to the heaven, and I am saved once again from an earthly fate. Claws tickle my feathers, and jaws kiss the air I was. Mongoose, now insane from the poison call of its desire, stands up at me from raging eyes. So up and down I glide with enticing trickery, and I wait. The mongoose jumps with instinctual predictable attack, and when once did he fall awkwardly from frustration, then do I dive right towards the now soulless eyes. Blinded, he runs frantic to hide, and I wait, as the timeless legend I am, for the seeds of death that are soon to bear their fruit. And so casually, once victory tasted, do I fly off beyond the setting sun into the night sky that I am, that is me. I am become the legend. And poem.
Nice read. That was a great piece by Dan. This is for the Alpha and Omega contest, which is a pretty big deal, actually. Nicely written. It says here the Raven. So I think that Dan is the Raven. Apparently he's witnessing the rest of this going on between the mongoose and the snake. Just pretty clever. Just a really well-written accounting of that. Clever take on it. Yeah, I'm not sure how it's supposed to work. I know that normally it's the I thought that the raven would be the one to fight the next one, but apparently I'm confused, which is fine. I've been that way before, many times. But definitely well-written and well-expressed and, great take on the mongoose and the snake and, the watchful eye of the raven. Just nice work. So great job, Dan. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Absolutely. It was a nice play out because usually the mongoose is the one that kills the snake, so to speak, because they are the quicker of the angle, but the two having delivered each other unto death offers up a different timeline where that which is older, wiser, more wary of the ways of things, because they do not have to battle, so to speak, the mongoose or the snake itself, but they do have that tendency to feed in carrion waves of pleasure to, hey, you know what? It's dead. I can take a few tasty morsels to fill my belly and kind of ruminate over, like you had on the thought of, what was it, regurgitate, recirculate, and ruminate. A nice touch right there from the bird itself offering up that which she normally does anyway, which is feed on the carrion waste. And smart enough to keep a wary eye or back or tail feather, for that matter, for the mongoose hasn't quite given up the goose, so to speak, ghost, and yet still does do the hardcore attack, knowing the mongoose is waning, takes its eyes out, and has it running around in circles, so to speak, until it dies, and then once more a little bit more to feed upon. And from the skies, not only does he get the taste victory, but he gets to view the surroundings itself, waiting for that nurtured little tidbit of pleasure to come along.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think it's a great job there. This whole contest intrigues me. So every time I get a peek at one of the pieces, it's like, yeah, very nice, very nice. So, and there we go. Sorry, I need to type like four more letters. Okie dokie. Well, Rick says I'm making them feel better by whining. See how the crowd is out there. I guess.
Wow. Nice touch to that.
yes. Hey, Naomi. I look forward to hearing from you. Let's see, what did Laurent say? Real work is transcendent poetry. One of the more gripping poems I've read this year. As a scene setter, you are a nonpareil. Your language is rich and delicious to read. There you go. Let me see. What else is over here? I think I'm going to read the next one. Die. Truth Chills. And this is a carryover from Tuesday. There we go. For Pam's Tuesday show. So let me put it up and see if I can read it without stumbling over it. Okay. This is called I Am She by Truth Chills. I am she who holds my enemy at bay, never too close, always an arm span away. Most prefer you behind them or under their feet. No, not me. Too easy for you to deceive me. You are a liar and a bringer of confusion. In one hand, you scream peace, and in the other, a handful of scythe. And to add more fear, you wear a tattered vestment, and darkness is your dank shroud. If I get a whiff of sulfur, I know where your focus is, and I double up on armor and stay alert. Your agenda can only be mayhem. To your benefit, being unseen allows you to roam free and cause discord and misery. Mother against son, son against father, murders, rapes, only the utmost depravity. I am she among millions to stand with me, to fight the fight for all our future families. End poem.
Great read there, Jean. Thank you very much. I like that picture. Well, it's kind
of
wicked, which is, I guess, why she got in there. The thought, there's a nice touch of wisdom in a note to a church without being overly indulgent within the faith. But it holds that note, you are a liar and a bringer of confusion. In one hand, you scream peace. In the other, handful of skies to add more fear. You are a tattered vestment of darkness in your damp shroud, the whiff of sulfur. I like that's what she offers up here. And I double up on armor and stay alert. The armor of God, the armor, the shield, the helmet of God, so to speak. And the notations to you want to take anyone and everyone that you can under your wing. But there's that note of mothers holding the strength behind the verbal acuity to say, no, not my babies, not my sons, not my daughters, not my husbands, or any other who will stand against you. It was something a little different from truth.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I have to agree with that. This is, I thought it was a great piece. You know, you look at the image, you can kind of see why it went the direction it did, absolutely. You know, I am she who holds my enemy at bay, never too close, always an arm span away. You know, that what a great way to lead into that. And, you know, it's her taking a stand against the evil and, you know, the devil, if I may, you know, in the image, you know, all that, just standing against it all. I mean, you know, and sometimes that's all you can do, right? You just put your best foot forward and fight the good fight. And I think that she pretty much called it out very well, you know. And, yeah, so awesome job, Truth, and I appreciate you sharing this with us. And this is my version of Tuesday. So I'm glad to have the piece. Thanks for sharing it with us. Absolutely. Okay. And that was good stuff. Okay, let me see now. Okay, I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to put this next piece up by S. Sharp. And Laurent says it's riveting and visceral. There we go. And this is called All the World Sings by S. Sharp. So, let me hit that button.
All the World Sings by S. Sharp.
All the world sing.
The muse
All the world
sing. Not really ill.
The muse
will be
sick,
then,
but not really ill, will be heard. They are all a buzz and high.
Oh.
Okay. Now look, we got to get it together. The next one I have is by Ed Sharp.
Yeah, I didn't get it with SoundCloud.
That's okay.
All right,
I'm an audio
do that again. I started hearing.
Okay, what
wait, my echoing?
Oh, that's so funny. Okay, and look, we have two more callers, so I'm going to pick them up real quick before I put that one on. First, we have Naomi.
Oh.
Hey, Naomi, how are you?
Hi. Good, good,
another
good.
One tonight oh, my God, yeah. Well, it's good to have you with us. How's your day?
Yeah. Oh, I got a heat stroke from mowing the grass, and I was like vomiting everything. It was so hot here. It was like in the high 80s, and you know you
oh,
don't
wow.
realize it. Yeah, you don't realize it. Like it happened 20 yeah. years ago that it was this hot this time of year here in Quebec. 20 years ago, so that's really, you know, that's something.
Right? That's amazing. Well,
yeah.
I would, I'd kick back and put your feet up for a while. Nice cool drink. Yep. Don't let it,
yeah,
don't
I took a
take.
Cold shower with water, and now I'm feeling okay.
Very good. Very good. And I'm glad you're feeling better. That's important.
Yeah.
And hello, Pam. Welcome to the party.
Well, thank you. Good to be here. Hi, Jean. Yes. Hi, Naomi. Hi, Rex.
Hi.
Hey, Pam. Hey, Naomi.
Hello.
You guys just made it in time because I'm getting ready to play an audio by a shirt. Sorry. I'll behave, Rex. That's too funny, though. Okay. Hey, Frank. Welcome to the party. Okay. Now, I don't know if everybody can still find the link, so let me copy it and put it back up again. Here we go. This is called All the World Sings by S. Sharp. And let me hit that button.
All the world sings. The muse, sick, but not really ill, will be heard. They are all a buzz and hive, song and nature play. Oft they scale to sing bars a few by waggle. Over under between thy note my song meander. Do thee haggle. So well, so long, so at best. Ho hum, hum ho, or rhythm and blather, skin drums, jazz caps, ways a mini, harmony, boo-boo, cymbals a clatter, maestro plays. Not to be outdone, birds fly to new octaves and nest. Ho hum, hum ho, rhythm and blather. Trees, amphitheater, nature, da da dum, a breeze section. Why must we isolate everything? Winds exhale, even unicorns have horns. Detached, attached, strings abound. Chorus, melodies, astound.
Great read. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. And I apologize for the first interruption. All right, girls. Pam, you're up first.
Okie dokie, Smokey. Well, I really like the way that he plays with words in here. It's such a kind of has a joyful feel to it. The muse sick but not really ill will be heard. They are all abuzz in the hive, song and nature play. I like how he touches on the idea of the music within nature, and then he even gives us the magical elements with the winds exhale, even unicorns have horns, detached strings abound, chorus melodies astound. There's a great flow to this, and a truly clever playfulness that's well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah. Oh my gracious. I was just, smiling all through this. The SoundCloud, his voice, so great. And the way he plays with the words, like right from the start there, the music, not really ill. will be heard, but it was when he got down to the how, hum, hum, ho, da, da, dum, the way he said it was made me chuckle. But like Pam said, an amazing play on words, and just a delightful ride all the way through. I really, really enjoyed this one.
Thank you, Naomi. All right, Jean, how about you? You're mutating.
Cousin, first thing today, yes. I didn't even make it a half hour. Damn. Anyway. Well, now, let me see if I remember what I said. I said SS did a great job with this. It was a lot of fun to listen to him read this because he had kind of bounce in his voice to make it all come to life and just be really, just fun and playful. It sounded, it made you just want to hear more, and I thought that was excellent. And I think it was just a lot of great wordplay throughout, and I think that, it was just wonderful. I saw that, I could see never mind. Anyway, I think that he did an excellent job, and I really enjoyed it. So thank you so much, Scott, for sharing with us tonight. I really enjoyed the piece. Absolutely.
Yeah, he had a hell of a fun time with this, playing with the angle on the not just the words, but the thought of running out an orchestral theme with this and hitting those notes going higher and lower as he ran through the piece itself. I'd like the thought offered up two venues, the muse sick, but hitting on music at will be heard and running in the beehive, a buzz in the hive, song of nature play. You get that notion of how an orchestra can be wrought into thoughts and images of nature and that which the animals can make in nature. So hits on that very well. And I did like the skin drums, jazz cats, ways of many. That was nice. But also the play on that, the last line in there, harm on me for harmony, boo-boo, cymbals, a clatter. Nice touch with that. The new octaves and nest, ho-hum, hum-ho, rhythm and bladder. Again, hitting on the rhythm of how everything plays into. And then the note to when the cymbals come in, the horns, the strings, and how, all in all, it does astound. It's a great piece. And that was done for, in the E.E. Cummins contest.
Wow.
Thank you. That's sharp. That was cool.
Yep, that was pretty bad. Okay, well. Hey, let me see. I'm not on mute, am I? No, I'm not on mute. This is a good thing. God, here I go now.
Yes.
Naomi, I'm going to put the next one up for you, if you don't mind, by Yandra Yoshri.
Okay.
Here we go.
Okay. A warm embrace, a supreme authority of ecstasy's passion planted in mind by the hands of nature, swallowed in nature's wonders, sunk in the works of nature's paintbrush, the warmest shade of a grove of cypress trees that harmoniously balanced, relaxed, elegant atmosphere adds to the feeling of spirituality. The melodious, hushes, chant, lures sensations, activating pathways to forge indestructible connections. The whispers of the sweetest companion bestowing charm thrill to change the mood. A veil of softness of lavender's perfumes suggesting dreamy imaginations. The energy of serenity lies dormant in all things, a divine desire waiting to be awakened. End poem.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you very much. And Gene, why don't we start with you?
Well, you know, I thought this was nicely penned. It had a calming effect throughout, I thought, as it unfurled. You know, it was well written. It was nice lines. But I think each one kind of was soothing in its own way. So I found that to be kind of interesting throughout. But yeah, it was definitely a nice piece with a lot of great imagery as well. So, yep. Thank you so much, Rhonda.
Thank you, Jean. Yes. I do got notes. She's got 33 trophies on this piece by itself. All right, Pam, what about you? What'd you think?
Yeah, I have to agree that with Phil that the there is really a calming kind of sense of peace found in this. And I like how that idea is very meditative in the idea of not hurrying through nature, but really taking time to appreciate nature for its beauty, for its delicate touch. And I even like the mention of the soft sounds, the melodious hushes, chant, lured sensations, and the whispers of the sweetest companion bestowing charm, that thrill to change the mood. There's just such a wonderful feeling of peace and harmony within these lines, and it's very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Naomi, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, well, I so agree with Pam there. The feeling of, you know, peacefulness as you read it, and as Phil said too, you know, she says that the energy of serenity lies dormant in all things, a divine desire waiting to be awakened. You know, there's something also like a kind of mysticism around the poem, and of course it's very, you know, an aura of spirituality here. I love how she, you know, swallowed in nature's wonders, sunk in the works of nature's paintbrush. You know, just a softness to this poem that's really enchanting, just beautiful.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Naomi. I'm going to hit on what Jean said. There's a calming note to this. But I'll go one further because Randa actually used the inside along with that a grove of cypress trees that it's harmonious. There is a note to actually the warm embrace of nature itself. It is calming and it is harmonious. You actually take a chair, go sit out in the woods and chill for a bit and listen. Just listen to the wind whisper in your ears, the leaves rustling on the trees, the chittering of squirrels, the chirping legs of crickets, and just embalm yourself within that warm melody, that that warmth of naturalness, which most tend to want to deliver themselves out of, but would find so much peace if they actually put themselves into. And even on the bottom end of this, the softness of lavender's perfumes, that's a nice touch, that little waft of something sweet on the air that gives pleasure to the surroundings besides all the other flavors and all nature's paintbrush. Nicely done, Randa. Thank you. All right, Jean, we're back on you.
Okie dokie. Well, Pam, I have
the
next one.
On the rabbit, back on the rabbit.
Oh, God. Oh, my gosh. My
yeah, God. And Bugs is on top of the pile yelling, dog pile on the rabbit.
Where did it go? Okay. Pam, I have the next one up for you on whenever you're ready. Okay?
Okie dokie, Smokey. All right. One Vermilion Night by Diane D. And it goes like this. Bright red embers and frothy foams stain the timbers of blazing homes. Screaming sirens stir the sleeping, came the sound of children weeping. Terracotta bricks exploding into rock bits, skies unloading. Firefighters fray the dust storm, devastated, homeowners mourn. Molten metal of shrieking cars, blue bottom flames caress the stars. No forgiveness is rising flames, paint the night sky in orange rains. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Naomi, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, well, we went from calming to a sort of like a frenetic feeling here. You know, you know, this is like really, you know, sad when it happens, and it does happen, you know. And you can just feel the whole situation and unfolding, because Diane describes it so, you know, amazingly, with such vivid imagery, like the screaming sirens, fear the sleeping, came the sound of children weeping, and then she has the terracotta bricks exploding into rock bits, and then the last stanza is amazing, you know, no forgiveness as rising flames paint the night sky in orange rains. You can almost see like all the embers there, you know, just like falling stars as the fire rages on, you know, all the bits of fire all falling from the sky. So just amazing imagery all throughout, and amazing flow to this poem, but very powerful in all its imagery.
Well said, Naomi. Thank you very much. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really like this one. I actually put it on my amazing rights list. First of all, I was really impressed with the format that she did for the original contest it was in, where it was four syllables per line and four lines per stanza. And to keep a consistency like that, with such a short syllable count per line, and use the imagery to tell a cohesive story, really add to the brilliance of the poem. And I really like this all the way through. but there's such an intensity in terracotta bricks exploding. And then I like that she brings in the firefighters and the homeowners and the reference, the blue bottom flame. I like that she didn't just bring in the orange and the flame, brought in the blue flame. And then the line, no forgiveness, and the imagery of orange rains. You know, that the orange rains really captures the imagery of the sparks falling down and no forgiveness because, you know, because you can tell from the other imagery, like the terracotta bricks, that this is a fire that's, you know, in most likely an apartment building or a city on a city street. And so, you know, you're looking at either, you know, an accident because somebody wasn't paying attention or you're looking at possibly arsonry. And either way, there's that emotional impact of people who are at this point so very hurt and so very angry because they have lost what's important to them. And so just a powerful rite and very well done.
Nicely said, Pam. Thank you. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this was excellent. I thought there was wonderful imagery throughout. Oh, I am not on mute. Yay, me. I thought it was wonderful imagery throughout, and I thought it was vermilion well expressed. And I thought Diane did a great job with this piece. It really did. It packed a punch all its own throughout, and I thought it was just really well done. So, nice work.
Excellent. Great comments, guys. This does hit on that note of you might think of this as the arsonist enjoying the moment, so to speak, because they live for that fire. Because fire is a breathing, living entity that roils until the juice that's fed is finally gone. And whether it be buildings, forests, or any manner of object that sits in its way, because once it starts and it's got plenty of fuel to feed on, plus the oxygen around it, it's just a storm. And she hits on that note of the firefighters afraid of dust storm because of all the smoke that comes with it. But it does. It'll melt metal. Like Pam said, the blue bottom flames was a nice touch to the reality because it isn't just pure vermilion, red, or orange. There are notes of blue that roll through a fire, too. And it does tell a great story in and of thought that you're running four lines of four syllables each. So nicely done, Diane. Something different without your sound class.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree. Okay. Well, I'm going to put up the next one by Weaver of Dreams, and it's called A Wee Rant, and I have a sound clip for that. So let me start that one up.
I detest with every fiber of my being trite, happy endings in films and on TV. Wooden actors showing no sincerity. Every gesture is nearly thrown away. Acting with the body, not the eyes. What's more, in extremis, there's not a tight throat amongst them. No tears are shed, no streaked mascara. If art does imitate life, they become artless. No closer to a genuine emotion than a goldfish in his solitary bowl and with the same blinkered vision. So, to paraphrase, turn off the TV, switch yourself on, and live a little.
Great read, Diane. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. And, all right, Pam, you've got first dibs.
Oh, man, this is fun. I can relate to this. First of all, I got to wonder if that TV is actually Kate, and at some point she threw a stone at it or something. but...
I think it's sitting on the floor. I think the dog or the cat got... and topple it over.
But But no,
hey,
there
must
really...
have been birds playing on there, or fish. The cat went bonkers.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that was probably it, a screen with fish. But no, I really like this all the way through, but I really like where she brings in, what's more, in extremis, there's not a tight throat amongst them. No tears are shed, no streaked mascara. If art does imitate life, they become artless. And it reminds me very much of soap opera type acting and watching these people that you feel like they can't relate. And I also really like the imagery, speaking of fish, of no closer to a genuine emotion than a goldfish in his solitary bowl. It's like, but I think besides the fact about TV itself, it also works well as a metaphor for the idea of people who don't even try to live life to the fullest, to really truly feel. You know, they just kind of go about their life like those like soulless little goldfish. And excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you? Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
Oh, Jeannie, do we have to wrap the bottom to get the mutation out?
Oh, my God. Here we go. Boy, I tell you, it's going to be one of them nights. I'm going to blame it on my feet. That's what I'm going to do. I think that Kate did a great job with this piece. I thought it was very well stated throughout. And, you know, her last two lines pretty much summed the whole darn thing up. So to paraphrase, turn off the TV, switch your cell phone, and live a little. You know, like, you know, jump into the real world, you know. Enjoy it a little bit. Don't just sit there and be halfway entertained by the TV and what they have to offer you there. So I think it's just a great job there. So nice work.
Thank you, Jean. And Naomi, how about you?
Oh, yeah. I just love this, right? You know, and it's so true. You know, there's so many people who live through their actors, you know, their favorite actors on TV, and they don't live life themselves, but they just live it through, you know, whether it's reality TV or, you know, through these series that go on. And, you know, where, like Pam said, these soap operas where everybody is pretty and everybody, all the men are handsome and all the girls are so pretty. And, you know, and it's like plastic TV, you know. You know, it's just not the reality. And, you know, and like Jean said, that that last line there really, really hits home, you know. Turn off the TV, switch yourself on and live a little. Yeah, I think she states such a powerful message in this write. And, you know, that hits a note with anybody, you know. So very relatable and a very awesomely well written piece here by Weaver of Dreams.
Oh, thank you, Naomi. I gotta say, if that was a wee rant, I wonder what ire looks like, or even anger from Weaver. But she does. I like the opening here. Detest every fiber of my being. Try happy endings of films and on TV. Yeah, there's no thought to and the way everything she's gotten here, it hits on those ideas of there's no originality anymore. Hey, you know what? It's only been 10 years. Or it's already been 10 years. Let's do a remake of the one that made us so much money back then. We won't tell more of that story. Yeah, except the story sucks the second time around because you've lost the whole idea of what the story was to begin with. And then the remakes broad stroked in another direction and hold no truth to the original. So what's the bloody point? If you've got no original ideas, don't make the stinking things. And I think that's just, hey, you go to a theater and it costs you $20 just for a ticket. And then you got to have your notation with your popcorn, candy, peanuts, and Cracker Jacks. It gets real expensive for a person, and it's not really worth it. So, I'll second the rant there, Weaver.
Yeah. I mean, how many Spider-Mans are there now and Batmans and, oh, my gracious.
Yeah, very true. All right, Jean.
Where
would you like to go?
Well, Lex, I'm going to bring it back to you. So, here we go. This one's by Minstrel. So, whenever you're ready.
Okie dokie. Shades of Grey by Minstrel. Day is night, and night is day, blending views to shades of grey. White is black, and black is white, bending darkness, bending light. Good is bad, and bad is good, iron branches, twisted wood, moral standing, evil play. Greed and power have their way. Lies are truth, and truth are lies. Stories played to demon eyes. Pressures on in coercion. Shamed and blamed for diversion. Who's are bad and who's are good? Voting process for statehood. Division plans are applied. Interference from outside. Rich is poor, and poor is rich. Living here comes with a hitch. Independence, freedom's gone. Different ways are frowned upon. War is peace, and peace is war. Games are played out on the poor. Parabellums strike a blow. Governed sources told you so. Right is wrong, and wrong is right. Set the tone for us to fight. For day is night, and night is day. Bending views in shades of gray. End poem. All right, Pam, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, Pam asked if you favored the last, actually.
Well, I guess it's up to you then, Gene.
Well, there you go, there you go. I thought this was very clever and very well expressed. I love the rhyme throughout and the back and forth of the read itself. You know, I kind of liked that when I read it the other day on the reading list. I just thought that it was just a really great job, and it was well done and enjoyable. You know, I think you had something to say. And I like the way you said it.
Oh, thank you. And Naomi.
Yeah, you know, this makes me think of, remember Tuesday, Phil, when Pam had this poem up and she had the line, London Bridge is falling down and something like the rest of the world is following or soon to follow. It really made me think of that because, you know, it's like society today is like all mixed up. Like you don't know where you're going. You don't know what's good. You don't know what's bad anymore. You know, they make it, you know, the rich is poor. The poor is rich. It's all mixed up. And he states it so well, you know, all the frenzy and all the what's wrong with society today in this poem, in such a concise, well-written way. Just an amazing, amazing write here. So just enjoyed it so much. I love the title, Two Shades of Gray.
Yeah, I like the title, and that pickoff is up a thought to the loss of moral tonality for society itself, and the thought of shades of gray hits on that note. Not everything is black and white or truth and lies. There is that nature in between, that veil of gray, which everything pretty much sits within because everything hits on a note of there's always this angle or that angle or this nuance that has to be explained within that which is being done, but it really never hits on the right note. So it's always either demonized or thought as wonderful. Yeah, it still lies in that arena of arena of not just arena of gray, but almost a middle ground where everybody gets stuck in. Nobody ventures into, but some get stuck in. Am, how about you?
Yeah, well, first of all, great comments, everybody. I like how this had that feeling of too much riding the fence, of a world gone topsy-turvy, of, as Naomi mentioned, the idea of society falling apart. You know, that I like this all the way through, but especially Lies Are Truth and Truth Are Lies, stories played to demonize, pressure on and coercion, shamed and blamed for diversion. Really a powerful write and very well done.
Mm-hmm. Back to you, Gene.
Eugene, where the hell are you? Right to call you. Okay, well, okie doke. I'm going to read the next one. And hello, Rose. Hello, everybody. Okay, here we go. This one's by Doc Frank. This is called The Missing Piece, A Life's Lease to the Eyes of Peace. You are my missing piece. Without your love, I'm deceased. You truly make my heart beat and creep. All secret pent-up fears released. Put a troubled mind at peace. My concerns decrease. Optimism increase. My love, Clarice. Your Louise. And foam.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, since you took a powder on the last one, this one's yours up first.
Yeah, well, first of all, I really liked the diamond shape. The name Clarice, of course, makes me think of Silence of the Lambs. But, I can see why he used it, though, because with the wanting to have a similar end rhyme, you know, because it's not exactly mono rhyme, but it's very close. And so I can see why he chose that. I really like how this is, in just a few lines, he expresses the kind of love that you would feel lost without the person. That they, I really like the line, all secret pent-up fears release, put a troubled mind at peace, my concerns decrease. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Oh, thank you, Pam. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, me too. The shape really caught me at the beginning. And, you know, the missing piece, like Pam said, you know, it is the kind of love that, you know, without the other, you feel lost and you feel so alone just lost. And, he expresses it so well throughout this poem here, this little brevity, so much said in so few lines. And, you know, the concerns decrease and optimism increases when you're with that person that you truly care for and that is there for you and you are there for them. So a beautifully expressed piece, well expressed piece here by Doc Frank.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Naomi. All right, Jean, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, you know, I thought it was nicely penned. I thought it was a clever brevity and the great rhymes throughout. You know, it was just rhyme after rhyme after rhyme, and he carried it from beginning, you know, to end. And, he did nice work with it. So great job, Doc Frank. Thanks for sharing.
Absolutely. And even with that one single line, he could have had it S to the beats and held that note, but it would have taken a little bit out of his construction. So it's a nice mono rhyme piece that works all the way through, and it does show the angle as well as the play, the missing piece, the name of the piece, name of the, and then offer a piece, a life's lease, the eyes of feast, you are my missing piece, all within the first four lines, a double thought to finding that which is that lost note, so to speak. Nicely done, Doc. Thank you. All right, Jean. It's back to you.
Okay. Naomi, I will have the next one for you, please.
Okay. Just getting back to the page. Yes, by Sapphire Rose, Cleansing Shower. And she wrote to the prompt, "Your wound is probably not your fault, but your healing is your responsibility. Fragments of a shattered past rinse clean with water. The past pools at my feet, feeling alive again as the memories drain away." End poem.
All right, Jean, we're coming to you first.
Jeez Louise, I didn't even get three words down yet. No, I thought this was the most excellent book. And I think it was a wonderful take on the prompt, for sure. You know, and I love that prompt. Your wound is probably not your fault, but your healing is your responsibility. I think some people lose track of that. You know, they really do. They want someone else to heal it for them, and no one else can do that. So I think that was an excellent piece, Sapphire Rose, and thanks so much for putting it up for tonight. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much there, Jean. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this is absolutely a wonderful brevity. And I, too, really liked that prompt. This, you know, it's difficult to separate any one part, but I like how the use of the reference to water, makes it feel like tears, like crying as part of the healing process. And I also like the imagery in the end line, drain away. It's that idea of treating that past like the garbage that it is and letting it go and letting it, like sending it to its grave. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Naomi, how about you?
Oh, there's so many parts of this that I really love. You know, of course, the metaphor of water use, as Pam said, all through, which, you know, rinses and cleanses you from the past, if you'll let it. And the past, just the line, the past pools at my feet, you know, they're the past pools. So the pools from the past, all the, you know, is a metaphor for all those, that negativity that happened, or those past, bad memories, you know, that are now at her feet there, as she steps forward and the memories drain away. So just amazing brevity here, you know, so powerful in so few words. Just an amazing write by Sapphire Rose.
It is at that. Thank you very much there, Naomi. I'm going to go with the double baptismal thought, the act of the fragments of the shattered past, the thought of walking through fire, so to speak, your sins burnt to rinse clean with water, wash off the ashes, let them drain away as the memories. So you end up with the thought of the healing process. You kind of baptize yourself into the pool past the fire to actually rise like a phoenix from the ashes. It's a nice way of actually putting it forth and done in, what, 20 words, 23 words? Well done, Sapphire. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, let me see now. Pam, I have one for you. And
okay.
Here we go.
All right. Mum's Musical Taste by Chris Bond. Mum's musical taste, what can I say? I say Queen are her faves. She listened to Kristofferson while ironing away. Of modern music, she likes Adele. All I can say to that is, oh well, we all have guilty pleasures among our musical collections. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Naomi, why don't you start us off, please?
Yeah, there's a kind of like a sincere way about this poem, you know, that it's really written from the heart, you know. She talks about her mother and her musical taste. She listens to Christofferson while ironing away. You can just picture that, you know, the music playing as she's ironing the clothes. She likes Adele. All I can say to that is, oh, well. And we all have our guilty pleasures among our musical collections. So just an amazing, amazing tribute to her mom, but in a unique way, you know, by relating to her mother's musical taste here. So, yeah, well, Tim, I guess, his mother's musical taste, and you know, just a unique way and clever brevity, so witty and well done. I just enjoyed it so much.
Thank you, Naomi. All right, Jean.
Well, I think this was just a nicely penned brevity all the way around, and a great nod to his mom and her music. Yeah, it was a great little piece that he created for the show. So, nice job, Chris. Thanks for sharing.
Well, thank you, Gene. And I'll second that. This was his take for Mother's Day, offering up his mother's favorite music. And I did like that little touch of humor towards the end of modern music. She likes Adele. All I can say for that is, oh, well, not my cup of tea either, Chris. So I can roll with you on that one. Nice touch with a little bit of humor. So, and yes, everybody does have their guilty pleasures when it comes to music. So cheers on that. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Well, I have one for you, Rex.
Okie dokie.
Whenever you are.
Woman by Zizi. At birth, flamboyant you in nickel bloom, in cradle, chuckling sounds beside the pool, by whose calls morning answers come anew, whose sunlit smile as your eyes look illume? On speed's prime the noontime leaps in play, in crown of ribboned hair upon the curves, adorning broad thy girdle's conquer nerves, with seed that carries life beyond byplay. Astride, upright as Queen Oak's shields on guard, from guts of gust that count a lifelong line, a like wine of age that's taken from the vines, still glumming tides thy burning face unmarred. The nightingale calls on nighttime in gales, at daybreak, after gloom, your face avail. And Paul.
All right. Naomi, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, this is just has such amazing lines throughout. Just, you know, I just loved his reference there. I like wine of age, because, of course, I love wine. I like wine of age that's taken from vines till gloaming tides thy buoyant face unmarred. And in the last couplet, the nightingale calls on nighttime and gales, at daybreak out the gloom of your face avails. You know, just such you know, a spiritual aura that surrounds this whole poem, you know, with such beautiful lines that bring out, you know, all that is feminine and that is woman. Just beautiful.
Thank you very much there, Naomi. All right, Pam, how about you?
I need Jean to comment.
Okay. Sure. Jean, you get the comment.
Sure, no problem. You know, I thought this was a beautiful piece all the way through. You know, there were such beautiful lines, and there was something just soft. There was a softness in the words that kind of reflected the you know, the title, Woman. You know, I think that, I don't know, it was just beautiful. It was a beautiful sonnet. You know, and the couplet at the end, the nighttime calls from nighttime in gloom. At daybreak out the gloom, your face avails. Beautiful way to tie that up completely, but, you know, each stanza was really just well written and just pretty imagery throughout. So, nice job.
Thank you very much, Jean. You ready, Pam?
Yep. I just thought this was a beautiful sonnet. I like that it took us through the from birth to death, and talked about this and wrote about the strength and the beauty of a woman. And it doesn't necessarily focus on one specific woman, but rather the idea of what women are and what they're capable of becoming. And this is beautiful all the way through. But I did just really like that third stanza with astride upright as Queen Oak shields on guard from gusts of gust that tout all lifelong lines. Truly the idea of how women are created to be like just powerful forces, excellent right and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And you're right, it is a sonnet, but done a little differently with the first and last lines rhyming and the two inner lining and running that throughout the piece itself, which was, I haven't seen that before, so I like that thought. Also, the use of a mickle in here, as well as the play, going with a nightingale, calls on nighttime and gales. There's a nice touch of playing off a double thought. And guts of gusts, again, running a different thought, but playing with the angle of the words and how they're spelled, which is really nice to play. And I did like the question ending that first stanza, through sunlit smile at your eyes, look, illumine. The creation of jubilance, brightness, in the moment of within a youth, 4, 5, 6 years old. And again, Pam, you hit on that note of through the stages of life, our speed to climb, singing time, we can play, and crown a ribbon hair upon the curb, adorning broad, by girdle, on the nerve, which she could carry flight beyond by play, which it was. And then the Queen Oak Shield, and then the finished nighttime falls, nighttime and gale, at daybreak, at the gloom, your face avail. There's that. Rebirth the next morning. Hey, might have been a bad night the night before, but he wakes up ready to take charge of those little ones once more. Thank you, Azizi. That was well done. And back to you, Bill.
Okay, this next one I'm going to put up is I'm going to put this up as another one by S. Sharp. And this is called the Kazakh Eagle Hunters. So let me hit that button and get that one started.
The Kazakh Eagle Hunters. The horse trots amidst the elaborate pageantry, celebration of custom, blonde mane blowing against muscled brown frame. Hunter steed, hunter and eagle approach. The Mongolian eagle hunter braves the cold fall winds, dressed in ornate coats, blends of color, headdress, furs of the fox and the wolves his eagle has killed. An anticipation crowd murmurs, golden eagles center stage. Still hooded, but eagerly bouncing upon the raptor glove, awaiting its cue. Crowd is hushed, hood removed, Golden eagle aloft soars in search of its prey. Brilliant sun-bleached cliffs along the Altai Mountains provide the vista for the Golden Eagle Festival. Winds spread 4 feet to each side. A powerful push pulls the eagle's frame up high. The hunt is on. Wind whispers through feathers as the gallant bird climbs and climbs to where only blue sky is her background. Beauty and grace then floats, wings spread, gliding. Suddenly she dives, twists into the shadows of the mountains along the beauty of the cliffs, jumping off. Hearts race, observers silenced as she disappears into the grove. 100 yards off where the openness ends, crowd stilled, eagle gone. But for a moment, reappearing, she soars above the trees. Prey secured in her talons, she screeches, heard across the hunting grounds. Triumph flies and lands at the foot of the hunter.
Great read, Scott. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam, why don't you lead us off?
Wow, this one's amazing. Just brilliant imagery all the way through. I really like that it delves deeply into history and a long time relationship with hunters or with people and animals. I would really like to see one of these shows. I bet that would just be like absolutely like awe-inspiring. I really like how he brings in not only the movement of the eagle, but the crowd's reaction to watching the show. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Naomi?
Yeah, well, I did see one of these shows. And, you know, and he described it so amazingly. Well, what I saw wasn't as amazing as what he described here, you know. The vivid imagery here, he just pulled the reader in. I mean, I see it's a front page pick. It's so deserving of front page pick, you know, with all the vivid imagery throughout. Just an amazing write. I think this is the best one that I've read from Scott so far. It's just enthralling. You know, all the way through. Yeah, amazing, amazing right here.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Naomi. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I thought this was a great write by SS. A wonderful tale told, excellent imagery all the way through. And I just really, really enjoyed just a great piece. And thank you for sharing that with us, Scott. Awesome work.
Excellent. Thank you, guys. This hits on two things. I like the opening, the horse trots and the elaborate pageantry, celebration of trust and blonde mane blowing against muscled brown frame, hunter speed, hunter and eagle approach. It's a nice touch. It does hit on the custom because way back in the day, the Mongols, starts off Mongolian eagle hunter on the second stand. The Mongols were the premier horsemen across the steppes out in the east, and so adding into the thought with the hunting with the eagle is a nice touch, and he sets a great thought, including everything with the scenery itself. The thought of the fur of the fox and wolves, his eagle is killed, which is what the hunter wears. But also the crowd itself is involved, murmurs, then as the hushed, and how the eagle soars along the sky, and then you see it dip below the cliff itself and into the woods, and you understand that whoosh of air and how the diving hits, I think, 60, 70 miles per hour. So, beautiful piece, Scott. Thank you very much for the vision you gave us with this piece. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okie dokie. Well, I'm going to put the next one up, and I'm going to give it a read. And this is by Jack Tomkovic. It's called Warm Flannel Muse. Wrapped in flannel, buttoned up to neck and chin, finger lips that lie within, only I hold the golden key. Unlock and untrod, ground called you, window clear pond with crickets and frogs. Bluebirds sit and sing their songs. I burn for you from head to toe. When tall tail gondolas flow, like healing rivers, they run from you, mountain blue to muddy yellow. End the poem.
Hey, Reed, Jean, thank you very much. And Naomi, why don't we start with you, please?
Just reading as I am here. My beautiful wife, Nancy, who is my muse these past 52 years and counting. Thanks, sweetheart. Oh, that's so beautiful. I just loved, the bluebirds sit and sing their songs. I burn for you from head to toe. When tall tail gondolas flow like healing rivers, they run from you, mountain blue to muddy yellow. It's just such a beautiful ride all through. It's just wonderful, wonderfully written by Jack here.
Thank you very much, Naomi. Anne, how about you?
Yeah, I thought, this is just really wonderful. I like how he talks about how beautiful he finds his wife, all wrapped up in her flannel, buttoned up from neck to chin. So he gets to use his imagination. He knows what's underneath that robe is all his. I really like the line, bluebirds sit and sing their song, I burn for you from head to toe. Just really wonderful, delicately passionate line, and very well done.
Thank you, Dan. And Jean, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, I think this was nicely put piece by Jack. It's always nice when he writes something for his wife or to his wife or about his wife, depending on, which angle he comes in from on the poem itself. But I think it was just lovely work, and I really enjoyed it. So thanks, Jack, for sharing with us.
Great comments, guys. He hits on, I think, two notes in this, two seasonal notes anyway, at least, wrapped in flannel, buttoned up to neck and chin, offers up that book to winter. But then again, he hit on bluebirds sit and sing their songs, I burn for you from head to toe. There is that notation of not just seasons, but age warming through the piece itself, a passage of time. And that note in the last stanza, when tall tail gondolas flow like healing rivers, they run from you, mountain blue, to muddy yellow. There is that note that which I take from you is the balm that heals, as well as the offering of something to ink for and to. Nicely done, Jack. Thank you. All right, Jean. It's a biker to you.
Okay. Well, I'm going to put this next piece up for Naomi, kind of. But I have a SoundCloud for it. So don't read it, Naomi.
Okay.
Yeah, I tried that.
Okay. So here we go.
Bloom. I remember the sparkle of spring's first flowers, the swollen buds on the branches of cherry trees, round, rosy, and ripe, bubbling to burst into bloom. The clear, crisp chirp
of a sparrow's mating song, and the smoky smell of cedar wood and spices that seemed forever embedded into your skin. You looked at me, your stare wild and hot, a deep gray blue sprinkled with mischief, piercing through me, the first person wanting to know about all that lay hidden behind my eyes. I could have loved you just for that. Maybe I did. You had wandered into my life as if from out of your own kind of distant wilderness, slipping through a peculiar, lonelier woods, incoming like a wave, roving as fast as it could, lapping up onto my deserted myrtle riverbank where early boughs sprung up shy and innocent, whispering of sweet Spanish sunsets in my ear, your velvety voice in deep husky murmurs took on the tone of a dark, stormy, indigo sea that filled my veins and boiled my blood till my body beat frantic to a wanton dance, and my stomach fell through my feet. The silvery, starlit sky rumbled and cracked open as I fell so softly into your strong, steady hands. Our shadows curled into each other, sliding across the old woven quilt spread out under a willow tree, my whole world becoming just background noise as I shuddered in the poesy of moment ecstasy, spellbound, captive to my intoxicating surrender.
Great reading, homie. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. All right, Gene, you got first dibs on this.
It must be because you hear me typing. Naomi, this was gorgeous all the way through. Really beautiful, a stanza upon stanza here. You know, whispering of sweet Spanish sunsets in my ear, your velvety voice in deep husky murmurs took on the tone of a dark stormy indigo sea that filled my veins and boiled my blood till my body beat frantic to the wanton dance and my stomach fell through my feet. Like, that's just one. I mean, I could have pulled any one of those stanzas without, you know, even having my eyes open. Just picked one and read it. They were all beautifully written and wonderful imagery, like all the way through. Just amazing. So amazing piece and really, really well done.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Gene.
All right, Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this is absolutely beautiful, Naomi. It's a wonderful sensual rite all the way through. I like how it builds up in intensity to the point of ending with the idea of the surrender, of giving in to the ecstasy. I like how there's this beautiful imagery in the beginning, and it's not just the imagery, but you also bring in the sounds like the chirps of the sparrow, and the smell of cedar wood and smoke and spices. And it's all like very, very intoxicating. And I really like, till my body beat frantic, till wanton dance and my stomach fell through my feet, the silvery starlit sky rumbled and cracked open as I fell so softly into your strong, steady hands. Just wonderful central emotive lines and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Thank you, Pam. Naomi, this is it's serene and peaceful with sweet notes, the sensuality and the vividity that you offer up with the scenery and everything that comes with it, the smells, the aromas of that which is going on around you. hits me with the thought of the very first love and its indulgence and that moment sprinkled heavily across the mind forevermore.
Mm. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Jane, we're back on you. Dogpile on the rabbit. Dogpile on the rabbit.
Okay, Rick. I'm going to have you read this one because there's a method to my name.
Okie dokie.
Okay. Yes, but there's a reason I swapped the order. So.
All right.
I'll figure. Thank you.
Dimensional dreamscapes or nightmares. Even forked moonlight sees the taste in road canneries, wailing guns netting a tonal sonata, as that tangerine marzipan drifts below your neckline's horizon. Warm red jello and fuzzy string cheese stemmed from black-toothed permafrost nostrils, bleeding mead crossed 40 naked godivers, melting neath the stare of goggly snogged tongues. Singeing a lock placid, keyed and belted chastity, steaming a breasted coconut sing-along bounce to Dale? 18 greedy guzzling gadflies buzzed Freudian slippage where Groman's outdated note beds lined her courtyard thighs as we ate brunching druids. But that cauldron was mine's and our fool was empty. I'd banana me tally stick, but I'm deserting a hairy beehive tarantula barbecue. Done right, it's like scraped knees on custard, and 16 candled legs are matchsticks for the dead. London's foggy scaffold kiss left us waxy as we whipped our puddled mold tuxedo, while Rod zoned us in his Twilight Gallery night flick, one tick from a Gong Farmer's Forevermore. And
Paul. Nice job, Rex. Pam, you want to start us off?
Yeah, I really enjoy when Rex does a stream of consciousness right. You know, because to me, Rex, you have two strengths that really come out. Well, probably more than that, but two that I'll hit on is your sense of humor and your ability to hit hard with just creative phrasing. I like that you brought the word goggly snog back into this poem and attached it to the word tongues. Warm red jello and fuzzy string cheese dreamt from black tooth permafrost. I tell you that a lot of this poem reads a whole heck of a lot like somebody who didn't have time to take care of their teeth. I banana me tally stick, but I'm deserting a hairy beehive tarantula barbecue done right. It's like scraped knees on custard and 16 candle legs are matchsticks for the dead. That part just cracked me up. And it kind of, to me, feels like somebody who got themselves in a position that they either really want to be in or they really don't want to be in. Just absolutely clever, brilliant, and I very much enjoyed this.
Thank you, Pam.
Great comment, Pam. Naomi, how about you?
Oh, yeah, this is, like, amazing. You know, the way you twist words and you make up words, it's just like a tongue, you know, a whole tongue twister all the way down. And I just love the last stanza about London's foggy, scaffold kiss left us waxy as we wicked our puddled malt tuxedo, while Rod zoned us in his twilight galleried night flick, one tick from a going farmer's forevermore. Yeah, I just love, you know, the way you play with words in every piece you write. So witty, so clever every time, and just so enchanting and just so captivating, you know, the way you play with everything, you know, from alliteration to amazing, amazing metaphors, and you know, some of those lines that I wanted to recite, but Pam already recited them, you know, like the warm red jello, fuzzy string cheese, you know, and other ones. But they're just amazing, 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 amazing. You're such a talented writer, Rex.
Well, thank you very much, Naomi.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and me, well, Phil, would you like to comment on Rex's piece? Oh, yes, I would. I thought this was a great piece, clever and well expressed, and I got a kick out of all the intriguing images that you created in this. You know, your wording is one thing, but the images that they create is like a whole different entity. So I have to give you credit there. It's pretty amazing when you're reading it. But I really enjoyed it very much. So nice work.
Thank you, Jean.
You're welcome.
All right. So where would you like to go next?
Well, now I have to put up Pam's piece because it's her turn in the barrel. So, Pam, whenever you're ready.
Okie dokie. This is a tragic love story told by the Cheshire Cat, and it goes like this. Welcome here, my pretty dear, to a land of milk and honey. Perhaps by chance you caught a glance of our hopping chocolate bunny. His ears and tail, they are gone. A hungry hippo bit him. Once he had the sweetest love. Now, sadly, he's still smitten. A hippo as a lover is a mad confectionery fate. For while he dreamed of wedded bliss, she saw him on her plate. I know, my dear, you wish to be any place but here, but you will find in place and time that life isn't always fair. Now think about that poor rabbit hopping down that trail, never giving a single thought to losing ears or tail. He was so deeply, madly consumed by calls of love. Stars, they swam around his head with songs of turtle doves. He is but one of many fools to fall for hippo charm. Perhaps someone ought to invent a hippo love alarm. You've never been in love, my dear. Well, count your many blessings. For love, it often takes your tail and leaves you second guessing. I see you haven't got a tail. Now that's proof within the pudding. Once you were insane in love and left with endless brooding. But praise be the higher powers, whomever they may be, that both your ears are quite intact. You can hear the birds and bees. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Jean, we're going to start with you.
Hi, Pam. I loved it. I loved the rhyme of it. I loved the story of it. I loved the humor of it. Just excellent all the way through. Lots of fun. Lots of fun. First, I was wondering if this was about one of those teapots when I read the title. I'm like, no, this is not. And I laughed. Somehow we got a bunny in there. Well, a chocolate bunny, and then we got a hippo. So I got real nervous. I was like, okay, Pam. And what kind of chocolate have you been munching on? Just saying. Yeah, you know, I know how that works now. But no, this is great. It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun and really well done. So, and I rhymed that. Did you hear that? Magic.
You
anyway,
did.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Cool.
Awesome fun there.
Thank you.
And Naomi, how about you?
Oh, yeah, this is amazing. Amazing, Pam. You know, the rhyme first, you know, the rhyme, the rhythm, you know, it just dances off the page as you read it. And, you know, the message in it, too, you know, the metaphors you use for, you know, what love I got out of it, you know, all the way through what love can do to you. You know, maybe it's if you keep your, lost your tail, well, poor you. You know, you were in a bad love affair. But thank God your ears are intact. So you can still hear the bees, birds and bees, the birds and bees, you know, being, you know, the yeah, well, we all know what
yeah,
the
know
birds
what and
the bees
are.
Are
you know me.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, just the idea of having, you know, the chocolate bunny, and you know, the falling in love with a hippo, and you know, seeing him as in wedded bliss, and then you know, and the poor rabbit, because you know or was it the opposite? A hippo as a lover is a, you know, he dreamed of wedded. Yeah, the hippo dreamed of wedded bliss, but she saw him only on her plate, you know, as a meal. So poor hippo. You know, but just amazing all the way through, you know, the story told, you know, all the way through. Just delightful and funny, and you know, just amazing all the way through.
Thank you so much, Naomi.
Well said, Naomi. And I don't agree with that, but I got one thing that's really bothering me. You had to throw in Hungry Hippo. Now I've got that damn commercial for when the game come out. Hungry, hungry hippo. Hungry, hungry hippo. And you see the damn things rolling across the board, trying to get up all the balls.
It
has that idea of the last chocolate bunny in the store. Nobody bought it to take him home, except the bloody hungry hippo that's now chewing on his ears and tail. So much for lucky rabbit's feet.
Yep.
And it also hits on that sort of, you know what? You got to drown your sorrows in chocolate eateries, because, hey, chocolate makes everything that much better.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that is for sure. That is for sure. But thank you, Rex.
You're welcome. All right, Jean, where would you like to go next?
Well, we have two more poems left that I want to try and get into.
Oh.
So this one here.
We've done rather nice then.
Yes, worked out pretty good. So I'm going to put Frank's audio on, and here we go.
Am I just dreaming a horrible episode of my subconscious mind? Am I already insane and have lost my mind totally? You will judge me on the account you will listen to. If so, then let me tell you about this gothic tale and about the ghastly ghost haunting me so endlessly. Upon the night of a day I shall not mention, except to say it was on a cold, chilly night, the echoes of the calls of the medicine crows could be thus heard, coming from the drear cemetery year of solitary road, where the old phantoms of the headstones roam the eerie woods, and where the wailing wraith of the woods haunts me with a daunting passion unmistakable, as she seeks to torment me when the vintage clock strikes 12. I can hear her stripping screams and shrieks as she scratches my windows and knocks on my door, her harsh and pale face and bleedy piercing eyes, and her unbearable voice calls out my name. But there is something I must confess to you. She is my former bride, who comes not for love, but for the very two teeth that I have extracted before so neatly, and buried in a wooden box under the planks of the floor. You see, what I've omitted as well is the truth behind this living madness, a truth that speaks about the value of a living soul, who unbeknownst to me I am buried alive. And listen to the chimes of the clock. It's sound of the violin. Know the story and the terror of its initial origin, and every night the crows came along my gable roof, whilst I heard the dreadful footsteps of the phantom of my nightmare. Without a little teeth, I am obstructed with a bloody mouth. Her name is Berenice, I still hear her tottering teeth, Do you consider me insane, or have I just conjured a wicked tale? Hear the voice of the children. If so, then whose 32 teeth of all are buried under the planks of the floor? Is Melanie's she has risen anew? No, no.
Great read, Frank. Thank you very much for the sound clap. It is greatly appreciated. And Naomi, why don't we go with you first, please?
Oh, yeah, this is an amazing, you know, take on that, the short story, Bare Knees, by Edgar Allan Poe here. You know, just such, so chilling and nerve-wracking. You know, that I can hear her, you know, screams and shrieks as she scratches my windows, knocks on my door with her ashen pale face and beady piercing eyes. An unbearable voice calls out my name. And then to have somebody buried, you know, alive, ugh, you know. Just an amazing, amazing ride all through, you know, Frank here. Amazing horror, dark piece. So amazingly written.
Thank you very much, Naomi. All right, Pam, what about you? Pam, you got to unmute.
Huh.
Oh, did we get deserted? Jean, how about you?
Well, I think it was a great job, Frank. Excellent tale told. Great imagery throughout, and I thought it was a fine audio. Nothing unusual there. It's always, you know, enjoyable like that. So, yeah, it was clever. I don't think I've ever heard the tale of Berenice, but that's not unusual. For me, but the story itself was well done. So thanks for sharing with us, Frank.
Thank you, Jean. Pam, you back?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, I am. Sorry, I accidentally bumped myself over to a different screen and couldn't figure out how to get back to where my mute button was. But can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure. So odontophobia is the fear of teeth. I really like that Frank was inspired by that short story by Edgar Allan Poe about the guy who had a fear of teeth, which is one I can actually relate to because there is something extremely creepy about teeth. I like that it had that kind of that idea that it captured the vibe of an Edgar Allan Poe story with the intensity of the fear and the buildup. But he did it in these short, impactful lines, you know, that and the reading was absolutely wonderful. And I really like the first person narrative. You see what I have admitted as well as the truth behind this lingering madness truth that speaks about the burial of a living soul who unbeknownst to me I buried alive. So, and there's another great nod to another Edgar Allan Poe story. So just absolutely an excellent write and very well done.
Well, it's okay. Thank you. Well, I didn't know about Berenice. I haven't read that one. But that thought with the teeth buried under the planks and under the bed in the bedroom had me thinking of the telltale heart, the chattering, mm-hmm. and the heartbeat that hit a nice note as to something different. So this, in that opening few stanzas, hit a nice note of introduction. And then he rolls right into it. Upon the night of a day that shall not mention, except to say it was, on a cold and chilly night, the echoes of the calls of menacing crows could be thus heard, coming from the drear cemetery near the solitary road. And then the beat with the thought of old phantoms, the wailing wraith, the haunt with the daunting passion, and that note of the vintage clock striking 12. Yes, nothing good ever happens after midnight. And then the thought with the 32 teeth he had extracted and buried in a wooden box under the planks of the floor. And that's where he had me, and I thought that was a good, nice touch. And again, the reference to the 32 teeth I have extracted from her bloody mouth. Ah, to think that she might have been dead as he buried her. That hits on that note of what they used to do in Victorian times or maybe not quite Victorian, a little beforehand. The coffins they built with bells with a string that went into the top of the coffin. So if somebody they thought was dead, wasn't quite dead, they could ring the bell and let them know, hey, let me the hell out of here. Although that's not quite this. Berenice, yes, that is kind of a nasty vision to see this pale, ashen thing walking in a bloody mouth, open maw, and no teeth. Yeah. That's a nasty bit of vision right there, Frank. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
Okay, Rex, and I have the last one for the evening for you to read. So here we go, whenever you're ready.
Wow, look at that picture. Okay. Home from the War by Laurent Divan. Home from the wars, he plied a different trade, repairing weapons for doughboys over at last. Barstock, center of the earth red, hammer hand finds its pattern and rhythm of creation. Off strikes to the anvil, maintains flow. Heck knew his trade, a journeyman farrier, making rounds months long, horses knew him, whittling, racing across the patch of the being, extending a foot. Casually picking up their feet, should anyone else try such a silly trick, they will get the hoof, and it won't be pleasant. Feeding the founding flames, shaping the steel into a heart, endless pounding without stopping, alternating hammers as he shaped the metal shoe, curving it inward on itself. Raw, red, glowing, he applied the horseshoe to the trimmed and cleaned hoof. Half turned, as clouds of burning keratin enveloped his head, hot setting the shoe, sealing it in place, burning hair and rotten eggs, the perfume of his work. Quick, precise strokes, nails driven deep, clipped smooth, job done. Hephaestus, or so he was christened, named by an aunt, who was said to have his sight. He grew up knowing what he wished from life. Screams of dying horses, and men, not one of them. And Tom. Gene, why don't you kick us off?
Well, I think this was a great piece by Laurent. It was Home from the Wars. You know, I look down here in the AN and it says, you know, Hephaestus is the Greek god of blacksmiths, metalwork, and carpenters and craftsmen. So on that note, I think that he really got this one pretty well nailed down. But it says, how many horses died in World War One? Totally over 8 million horses perished during World War One, and a bit of these horses that met their doom died as a result of an extreme conditions at the war front. You know, and I think that's an often forgotten fact. I saved something on my desktop a long while back about horses and war, and it's a shame because they do, they're just forgotten. But this was great. You know, we had horses when I was growing up, not, of course, you know, anything elaborate. But, you know, the blacksmith would come out and he would work on their feet, and, you know, it just always intrigued me. But this is a great piece. So thank you, Laurent, for sharing that with us tonight. Awesome work.
Thank you, Jean. Pam, mm-hmm. How about you?
Yeah, I really liked this all the way through. It had strong imagery. I like how the main theme of it is the idea of how difficult it is for both man and horse to readjust to civilian life after serving in a war. And I too didn't, like, I knew horses were in wars, obviously, but it never really dawned on me about the idea that so many of them were killed and you know, in the line of duty. So, you know, I thought this was just a powerful write, very educational, very entertaining. I like the attention to detail, like that the ironsmith or whatever they're called was named after the god of the blacksmith. Was named after the god of blacksmiths and metalworking by an aunt who was said to have the site. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, well, first of all, I have to, you know, give so much credit to Laurent, because every time he brings up a piece, it's about a different subject, and it's very educational, you know, most of the time. And this was, you know, you're really brought into the poem and the whole action, you know, of the blacksmith there. With the vivid imagery, I take the stanza there, feeding the founding flames, shaping the steel into a heart, endless pounding without stopping, alternating hammers as he shaped the metal shoe, curving it inwards on itself. And then he has raw, red, glowing, you know, he applied the horseshoe to the trimmed and clean hoof. You know, just this amazing, amazing writing, a vivid, vivid imagery all throughout. And like I said, it just pulls into the reader, right into the scene, you know, and just amazing. Amazing to witness this and to know a little bit about it, you know, how the people put on the horseshoes onto the horses. Just amazing.
Well said, Naomi. Thank you very much. The title is The Stand at Home from the Wars. Most people don't remember or have not been taught the sort of 4,000 years in peace and war. The horse was the main a purveyor of both men and goods. And when World War I hit around, its mechanization between the tanks, jeeps, motorcycles, and everything else, along with the guns that went with it, was quite the new power on the field that nothing could stand up to. And yeah, horses paid the ultimate price along with that, as well as that field of death, along with mustard gas and everything else, must have been quite debilitating to mentally. But the thought of a journeyman farrier making rounds months long, horses knew him, racing across pasture to greet him, extending a foot. Farrier is a great trade for people who know, and they got a lot of horses. And if you treat the horses right, the horses aren't that difficult to you. And he hits that right in here, casually picking up their feet. Should anyone else try such a silly trick, they will get the hoof and it won't be pleasant. And he's right. The horses are not just tricky, but they can be downright ornery in some cases, because they are, hey, like everybody else, their feet are what keeps them going. keeps them alive. So you got to be gentle. You got to know what you're doing, and you got to appreciate the flesh that you're actually taking care of. And the last two lines kind of hit on both ends. Screams of dying horses, men not one of them, speaks to the damage that World War One was in and of that time. Nicely done, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
Okay, well, we're coming back just in time to say goodnight. The show was great tonight. Thank you guys for calling in. Thank you, Pam, Naomi, Rex. Awesome sauce. Thanks to everyone who put the poetry on our board. And it was fun. It was a good night. Very, it's just another one of those eclectic nights of poetry. We never knew where we were going to go next. Kept us out of trouble. Anyway, thanks, everybody. And I hope you all have a great weekend.
Yeah,
bye, guys.
Everybody. Good night.
Thanks for, night, Naomi.